Hi everyone, my name is Patrick Akio, and if you're interested in moving from software engineer to engineering manager, like me, this episode is for you. Joining me today is Michael Doy. He's Director of Engineering at Mobiquity, and I love his perspective on balancing people, business, and engineering responsibilities. I'll put all his socials in the description below. Check him out, and with that being said, enjoy the episode. Beyond Coding. You barbecue a lot still?
Yeah, I mean, yeah? As a South African, we call them braais.
Yeah.
And it's like embedded in our culture. So when I moved into the apartment I'm in now, one of the first things I bought was a barbecue so that I could braai.
And you have a terrace? Like you can do it?
Yeah, I've got like a rooftop terrace.
Ah, beautiful.
So, it's quite nice. And it's quite high up. Nice view of the water and stuff. So,
I have a few few colleagues from South Africa and they were like, okay, we're going to do a braai for the whole unit.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it, but they were like, never again, because it was like 50 people and they were only like cooking.
Yeah, we convinced our company as well to buy a gas barbecue to put outside. And every, like, at least one Friday a month, we do, we braai hamburgers for the company.
Nice.
And it's also a huge pain in the ass because there's a lot of people.
Yeah, right.
And you have to stand there in the heat for like 40 minutes braaiing these burgers.
Yeah.
But it's always worth it though.
It's good food. Like, I really enjoyed that night, but I could see them. They were like cooking the whole time. Yeah, people were giving them praise, and they were like, never again.
It can be a bit rough.
Yeah, it was fun though. They told me that people in South Africa, I don't know if I should generalize, but they don't really clean the barbecue. They like rub an onion on it, and then it's like much. The more you use it, the better it tastes.
Exactly. It adds flavor. It gets so hot that it's going to obviously kill any bacteria, that type of shit. But yeah, typically, like, just take an onion after the grill is heated up and rub shit out of it.
That's the thing.
That's good.
That's really funny. You do it in winter as well?
If not the weather is nice enough, but not so much. I mean, especially, not so much here in the Netherlands, because winters are typically a little bit colder than South Africa. Significantly colder, actually. So not so much in winter, no.
Not so much,
If it's like a nice sunny day, then I'll often, like, if I get some nice burger patties or something like that, then I'll just go up and put them on the barbecue for like 30 minutes or whatever, or 20 minutes. And like that's it. It doesn't have to be a whole thing. You know, I don't have to cook like for 10 people. I'll often just do it for myself. So
sounds good. Yeah. But that one Friday, like once a month in the office, you still do that? Are you involved there as well?
Yeah. I mean, we have quite a few South Africans working for the company. So we normally sort of rotate the responsibility of cooking the burgers.
Yeah.
Last time I did, I burned my finger so bad.
Really?
Yeah. But we haven't done it now. Well, I was on PTO the last time we did it, so I don't know whose turn it is next, actually.
Yeah. And is it, I mean, we talked previously, there's no back to the office policy yet, right?
Well, they are trying to encourage people to come back to the office, but there's no like official policy, so to say. I think it's the same for a lot of companies. They are obviously trying to sort of not necessarily get back to where we were before COVID, but there is, you know, at least in my opinion as well, there is a sort of a nice vibe when you are with people in the office, and it's often easier to actually talk to people.
Yeah.
You miss those sort of coffee machine chats, you know, like the small little talks in between.
Yeah.
It's a good example happened to me last week. I was trying to reach out to one of my colleagues, sent a message on Teams, like, hey, I need you for 15 minutes. Can I schedule something on Monday? And he didn't get back to me. And I went downstairs to the canteen, get some coffee, and boom, he was right there.
Yeah.
And it took me 5 minutes to get the information that I needed. And that was it. It saved a meeting the next day on the Monday. So, it all depends. I mean, I do see the value in being in the office. But I think for a lot of people, it's kind of difficult because you have, you know, a lot of people change their lifestyles completely when they when everyone had to work from home permanently. For example, people stop sending their kids to daycare.
Yeah.
And to ask people to switch back like on a dime like that is a little bit challenging. So, I think any company that tries to enforce working permanently from the office is probably going to face a little bit of backlash.
I agree.
Because people are not going to want to do it.
No.
Like so soon after, you know, being so comfortable working from home. So.
Yeah. I wonder like what the lasting impact is going to be, because I see the trend that companies are trying to encourage. Like, not every company has a policy that's like, okay, you can only work X amount of days from home now. But the encouragement starts, and I think it's going to kind of progress in some companies, but I hope other companies will still kind of offer that flexibility. But exactly as you say, when people got, like when COVID happened, people got more flexible in how they did their personal time versus their work time. And even people that became parents during that period have no clue how to now manage kind of their kids and daycare and stuff like that if they have to go back to the office. Like it's quite a challenge.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I personally feel like I'm way more productive when I work from home because there isn't so much distraction.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm at the office and there's always, it seems like there's always somebody who needs something. You know, there's always someone at the desk, not always, but more often than not, there's someone at the desk asking for something or they need help with something and so on. Whereas if you work from home, then it's a little bit more asynchronous. You know, it's like you can reply to a Slack message after an hour. You don't have to necessarily reply straight away. So yeah, I like that aspect of it.
How's the company encouraging you to come back?
Well, they do a lot of activities in the office, this type of stuff. We had this ping pong tournament last week.
Oh, that's dope.
That was, it was really cool, actually. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. I didn't take part. I suck at ping pong.
Yeah, same here. It was fun.
And then we had an air hockey table in there this last Friday, which was also really fun. Again, I sucked at it. But yeah, I mean, the small things like that, you know, like lunches, breakfasts, this type of stuff. So they are definitely trying to encourage people to come back to the office.
I think that's the better approach rather than being like, you have to come back.
Yeah.
Try and be like, okay, we have this thing. And either it could be food or it could be an activity. Mm. And it's a thing. Show up if you want to.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll make it fun.
But also like, how do you enforce it, right? Mm-hmm. Unless you have some sort of like ID system where you know when someone is tagged in, so you know that they are at the office.
Yeah.
If you don't have that, then you sort of rely on the people managers to micromanage people to some extent to ensure that they are there in the office, which is, I don't know, it seems pointless and like too much work.
Yeah. Could you do that, you think? If there was a company policy that said, okay, every team, and they basically task the managers with make sure your team is at the office?
Fuck, it'll be difficult, eh?
Yeah, right.
It really will be because, I mean, we have, the company is quite big in the Amsterdam office. So it's going to be like every single people manager is going to be spending the most of the time following up with someone to check if they're in the office, and if not, why not, blah, 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 blah. So it's
like a full-time job.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Basically. So, and personally, I don't think, I don't really see it, at least not anytime soon, any company is going back to full-time work, at least in the IT industry. I think other industries, it's maybe a little bit more need for them to be in the office. But for IT, I mean, a lot of the work, in fact, almost all of the work you can do remotely.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of our clients, for example, are based overseas or in neighboring European countries. So it's not like we are on site at their offices in any case. So,
yeah, it makes sense. It's kind of an interesting thought, and I never thought about it. Has there ever been, because kind of going back to the office is an interesting policy to discuss, but that hasn't happened yet. In your past, has there ever been like a mandatory policy or something that you didn't agree with, but that you did have to kind of follow through on? Or have you always kind of found middle ground there?
Well, not in the company I work for now, but back in South Africa, I was working for this company where we had the super strict, it was for a period.
Yeah.
We had the super strict time logging policy. So we had to, it was actually really ridiculous because you had, we used a software called Teamwork, I think it was.
Okay.
This was years ago. They had a timer functionality where when you start a task, you could start a timer so you could, you know, how long a task took you.
Yeah.
And there was this policy that they enforced, essentially, that made sure that we had to start that timer every time we started a task.
Okay.
To make sure that we logged our 8 hours of work a day.
Per
and
task.
Then, yeah, basically. And then they would follow up, you know, like, oh, we see you only worked 7.5 hours on this day. What happened?
Wow.
So that was a pain in the ass.
Yeah. But were you on the kind of, were you in the IC roles, like individual contributor, or were you the person that had to like follow through that?
A little bit of both. I was the head of development there. So, and it was a small team though, so it wasn't super difficult, you know, to make sure that people were doing what they were supposed to be doing. But it was kind of ridiculous, to be honest. I mean, like nobody liked it.
No.
It was, what do you like? You have to pause the timer when you get up to go take a pee. Come on.
Yeah.
It's a little bit ridiculous.
I mean, so, from my Dutch perspective, it's like that is like not done.
Yeah, that was one of the things I really enjoyed about moving and working for a Dutch company. It's super, super flexible.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of sort of policies that will scare people away, I would say, at least from my experience up to now.
Yeah. There's this thing like in Dutch you call it gezond verstand, which is like I don't even know how to translate that, but it's like, yeah, if it doesn't make sense, it doesn't make sense, basically. It's like, it's not even think for yourself. It's just think, the direct translation is think healthy.
Yeah, I was thinking, because, I mean, Afrikaans is quite similar to Dutch.
Yeah.
So there's some, you know, you can sort of extrapolate some of the translations through just by knowing some Afrikaans. And yeah, I was, what is the word again?
Gezond verstand.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds almost like stand healthy,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, like, it's ingrained in the culture. If it doesn't make sense, people will argue it. People will kind of stand their ground and be like, why? Or I'm not going to do it even.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
principally, sometimes people say, I don't do this.
Yeah.
Which I think is, like, I've grown up in it. So for me to hear the opposite is weird. And I think it would be even weirder to then experience that. I mean, maybe I shouldn't label it as weird. It would just be a different experience.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was like, so I've only worked for one company since I've been here,
mm-hmm,
the last 5 years. So I am sort of curious how it works in other companies, but I would imagine it's more or less the same.
Yeah.
It seems like very much a cultural thing.
I think,
you know,
so.
It's not so sort of individual to each company, but more just of sort of a globally accepted thing or a regionally accepted thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's really ingrained in the culture. And I don't know, like, it's hard for me to reflect how it would have been otherwise. Like, even growing up in school, I had moments where I stood my ground and be like, I don't agree. Or
yeah,
I would tell the teacher, you're wrong. And it doesn't make sense. And I'm not sure if in other cultures that would, like, go through and as it did.
Shit, if I did that in school in South Africa, I probably would have been sent straight to the principal's office. I mean,
like yeah, that's what I hear.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm kind of curious, because you moved from a role of more so individual contributor,
yeah,
to more of an engineering manager position. Like, how was that transition for you?
It was relatively smooth, I think. So I first started as when I joined the company I'm with now, when I moved from South Africa here,
yeah,
I joined as just an individual contributor, software engineer. And then I think it was after about 6 months, they asked me to be a team lead. So to help manage some of the front end team at that time.
Yeah.
So I did that, I think, for, I don't know, a year and a half or so.
How was the work distribution?
It was more heavily focused on the like just normal software engineering individual contribution side of things.
Yeah.
And then you had like 4 to 8 hours. So more or less like one day a week to focus on like the people management side of things. So
yeah,
have your one-on-ones, mentoring, coaching, this type of stuff. And then they there's like a little bit of internal restructuring happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they opened up 3 director positions at the company. And to be honest, when I heard that they were opening them up, so they split it across 3 different groups, basically, foundation, platform, and applications.
Mm-hmm.
And since my experience is mostly around sort of front-end, full-stack application side of things, my manager at the time asked me if I was interested in applying for the applications director role.
Yeah.
And initially, I thought to myself, not really. You know, I was sort of happy where I was. I wasn't super interested at that point in sort of progressing more along the management track.
Yeah.
But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, actually, maybe it is the right time. Because I think every software engineer reaches a point in their career when they sort of have to, not have to, where there's an opportunity for them to make that decision whether or not they want to continue as an individual contributor or if they want to actually step into the management track and pursue that side of it. Because, yeah, I mean, also, like, I didn't want to necessarily be still coding full-time in my 50s,
yeah,
you know? Although I know a lot of people who are above 50 and are still full-time individual contributors. There's nothing wrong with it, of course. It's a choice. But I decided for me personally that would be the best way forward. Because I also do, like, software engineering is funny sometimes because it is really easy to burn out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you burn out a lot without even realizing it. You know, there's like small signs that people don't really pick up in themselves when they are burning out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then my manager asked me again, will you apply for the role? He's like, please apply for the role. So I was like, okay. So I applied for it. Did the interview, did a small presentation, and yeah, I got the job, basically.
Sounds like a great manager as well to kind of see that this is maybe in line with what you want to do, even though you might not have noticed. And
yeah,
that this is a good opportunity, a good fit.
And the nice thing is, it's still I still do some individual contribution. It's not like a full-time management role.
Yeah.
So I still work on clients.
How's the ratio? Sometimes.
It's more or less like It varies, you know, depending on the need, but I would say mostly like 80-20.
Okay. So yeah. So like kind of the opposite of what you had in the team lead role.
More or less.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. In kind of stepping into that team lead role, because that's where I'm at now, actually, and that's kind of a recent change, to see if this engineering manager path or track is kind of something I like, because I like interacting with people. I like talking about personal development, about growth, but there's a lot of challenges there. Like I did this course and it was more so about influence styles. Mm-hmm. And I noticed I can be really good at like the logic part. So argumenting, setting expectations, even asking questions. I mean, the podcast is fully in line with that, being curious. And I'm less great at kind of the inspiring part. Maybe that's kind of what your manager did for you, as in, we have this role, I think you could do it. That's more the inspirational part. Mm-hmm. In stepping into that team lead role and even going beyond as full like director of engineering, have you seen kind of challenges with how you communicate versus kind of the flexibility that your team requires, or what have been some of the challenges?
I mean, I think, you know, for when you're a team lead, it's very much focused on the people.
Mm-hmm.
So that is pretty much your, to some extent, your only focus, right? Making sure that you set people on the correct career paths, give them everything they need in order to reach their career goals, etc. And then sort of when you go one level above that, then there's other things to consider, like the business side of things.
Mm-hmm.
So the way I look at it now, it's sort of three parts. You have the people management side of it, the like actual engineering side of it, and the business side of it. And it's always sort of around finding the balance between those three things. So you have to, at some point, you know, learn to put your foot down to some extent. You can't necessarily let people walk over you in the sense of, I don't really know how to put this, but you have to put it quite plainly, I think, deny some requests. You have to learn to say no, essentially, a lot more than you would in a typical team lead role. Because part of your focus is on the business side of things as well.
Mm.
You know, like, how are the margins on a particular project? You know, what can we do in terms of staffing to make the margins a bit higher?
But at
the same time, also make sure that the people we are allocating to a particular project or a particular client are going to be happy there, and it fits their career growth or their career goals and their skill set as well. So, it's like I say, it's like three-pronged, basically.
Yeah, and the business side, I think, comes kind of the higher up you get, probably.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. But I mean, going back to what you were saying about your recent change to team lead, it's interesting because I think if you're new to a leadership role, then it always takes a little bit of time to sort of find your leadership style.
Yeah.
And there's no sort of right way or wrong way to do things. What I think is really has the most value is just being authentic.
Mm-hmm.
If you are sort of have natural leadership capabilities, then you can literally just be yourself. And that's it. And that is, to be honest, how I've gotten through most of my career as a leader.
Yeah.
It's just literally by being myself and not trying too hard. Because I think it can be quite obvious sometimes when, you know, someone is being like they are sort of forcing themselves to adapt or adopt a particular leadership style.
Mm.
And it might not suit them. But that's okay. And it does take a while for you to sort of find your footing and to find your leadership style. So,
Yeah, I try. I think it's really hard to act like someone I'm not. Like I think I'm authentically myself kind of most of the time, or hopefully all the time. But I do see sometimes limitations, or I hear stories about what other people do and be like, maybe I could grow in that, or maybe I'm not great at that yet. Mm. Like there was a conversation, and this was years back, with people that have, for example, end of year chats. I'm not sure if it was this company actually, but it was a while back. And they said, well, I talked to my manager and there was a mismatch in expectations, right? And that manager was like putting the blame somewhere else and like fully on trying to inspire, like, we can do better next time. I'm gonna put you in positions and stuff like that. And I'm like, they only did inspire basically. And I might not be great at that, but at least I can see where kind of the limitations of certain communication styles would be. And I try and be as flexible as possible. I don't want to enforce anything upon anyone.
Yeah.
That's why I was really curious if you were ever in a position where you had to do that. Because I would really struggle with that, I feel like. If I had to follow through on something I don't believe in, I think that's really hard.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there have been certain situations where I've sort of said no,
mm-hmm.
very directly, if there is something that I don't agree with.
Yeah.
I mean, one instance does come to mind, but it's not something I can necessarily talk about, unfortunately. But
sure.
Yeah, I, also, like, you have to be true to yourself to some extent, right? That is sort of part of being authentic.
Yeah.
It's staying true to yourself. And that's, I think that's one thing that is quite sort of undervalued in terms of what people think about leadership. So, yeah, always try and keep that in mind. It should be your North Star, you know, just
absolutely.
Be yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. How was it kind of transitioning into the flip side? Because you had kind of 4 to 8 hours more so people management as a responsibility, and then it flipped and it was like kind of 20% more so hands-on stuff.
Yeah, it was quite interesting initially, actually, because I didn't know what to do with my time. I was like, okay,
that's what I was going to ask.
Yeah. What am I supposed to do? And then that's when you have to sort of be a little bit more proactive and start finding things to do to some extent as well, and following up with people. And, you know, just like ultimately you have to own the role to some extent, right? Like, you know what your mandate is. You sort of know what your boundaries are and what your parameters are that you can work with.
Yeah.
And like, make the most of it. If you see an opportunity in the company to change something for the better, then you have sort of the power to do it, which is quite nice. So that's a part of it that I really do enjoy. And it took me a little while to actually sort of get to that point where I was like, oh, actually, I have the power to just do this thing.
Yeah.
Like, I have this nice initiative that I want to implement. Let's see if I can make it work. You know, and...
with those initiatives, how often are you in the driver's seat, and how often do you like enable other people or like get a following to
that's a really good question, actually, because it's oftentimes in situations like that, it's a great opportunity to test someone else's leadership abilities as well.
Yeah.
So because the team leads report to me, I will often try and delegate things to them to see how they might handle a particular situation.
Yeah.
And then you can see a person's sort of strengths and weaknesses through that as well. But there are, of course, some initiatives that I will take upon myself to do. If I always, and it's a little bit weird, but I always have this thing in my head, like, if you want something done right, do it yourself, which is not necessarily the right attitude to have. So I do try and like put that on in the backseat as often as possible.
Yeah.
But there are some things where if it's really important, then I know I'm going to do it myself, because either if it goes south, then I will be the one to take responsibility for it.
Yeah.
Or if it works really well, then yeah, then it works really well. So
yeah, it's I think it boils down to the accountability part, right? Can I give this away, or do I need to kind of keep control on this and make sure this goes right? Because this is maybe more important, or at least more important to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it also depends on schedules, right? I mean, sometimes I just don't have the time to do things.
Yeah.
So then I have to delegate them. So
yeah. Is that hard? Because I, from my role, I like doing a lot. And sometimes saying no to stuff I really want to do is kind of painful.
Yeah, I guess prioritization becomes important then, you know, in time management. Because if I know something is coming up on the horizon that I really do want to do, then I will try and make time for it. So I'll either then delegate something I'm busy with to someone else, or... find some way to make time in my schedule for that particular thing that I'm super interested in.
Yeah, and yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. You touched on burnouts a little bit ago as well, and I'm wondering if you have any like affordances in place to kind of see burnout signals early on, because it is more so rampant, I would say, within our field.
Yeah.
I was having this chat with someone and he said something interesting, like even take Scrum as a framework. We work in sprints.
Yeah.
He said no other athlete sprints over and over and over again.
Yeah,
we do. And I was like, that's genius.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
That is true. So yeah. It might even be apparent in our way of working. Mm. But I'm not sure what the solution would be.
I mean, there's sort of certain signs you can pick up in engineers, I think, when they are starting to burn out, especially from, you know, sort of lack of energy.
Yeah.
Just the way a person talks, the way that they sort of... interact with you, or the way that they behave in certain situations. Like one of the biggest signs for me is cynicism. When someone starts becoming super cynical about the work that they're doing, then that for me is a clear sign of burnout. Like they are not necessarily enjoying the work that they're doing anymore. But it's also it's kind of difficult, because you know, when you really enjoy something that you do, you want to do it a lot.
Yeah.
Right. But with software engineering, I think if you do it too much, then you do tend to burn out. I mean, when I first started, I was working a lot. You know, I was like, when I got home from work, I was opening up my computer and working more because I wanted to do it. It was fun. And it still is fun. But you have to also be careful. You know, there's you have to find that balance again between making sure that you are, you know, able to actually code
at
sort of a good standard, without draining your energy too much. So, but there's a lot of variables that come into it as well, depending on the project. I mean, they are super high stress projects as well. where you can burn out super quickly. Yeah, I think luckily in the Netherlands is again a really big culture of this work-life balance, which I think is missing in a lot of other places. And that's really nice. And I find, at least from my experience up to now, there's a lot of people who take that very seriously. You know, when 5 o'clock comes or 6 o'clock comes, laptop is closed.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No worries.
And that's it. They don't think about work until the next day.
Yeah.
But
are you also like taking that into account in your own way of working? Because sometimes I'm like, I'm typing this email because I'm working late, and I'm like, should I send this email? Because some people, when they receive an email, they think about work, or they get into like a mode where they have to do stuff. And I'm like, maybe I'll just... You can now schedule stuff to send during office hours.
Maybe I'll do that. I tend to use that scheduling functionality quite often as well. Because, sometimes with the nature of my role, I have to respond to emails, you know, after working hours and that type of stuff. But there are days I don't have my email on my personal phone, for example. Mm. I have Slack just in case of emergencies. But so there are days, for example, where I just do not want to sort of work after working hours, and then I'll just leave my work phone upstairs or leave my laptop upstairs and not really worry about it. If something is really urgent, someone will phone me.
Yeah.
You know, but of course, like IT typically is 9 to 5 most of the time, unless you're in certain industries. So there's not really a hell of a lot of action that happens after hours. It's mostly just like follow-up emails and small things here and there, that type of stuff. So
Yeah, you touched upon the kind of engineering part, the people management part, and the business part as well. And I'm wondering, I'm assuming you got more involved into hiring as well, as kind of expanding your own team, or even the team leads or team managers there. Mm-hmm. Is there any like particular thing you always pick on where hiring, or what is kind of your focus when hiring for new people?
I think capability for me is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. So regardless of a person's color, gender, anything like that, they should be capable.
Yeah.
But in general, I think hiring in tech is a little bit broken. You know, it's like, for example, the whole thing with the live coding.
Yeah.
I think that's a little bit ridiculous to some extent. I understand the necessity, you know, you have to sort of make sure that the person that you are wanting to hire is actually, you know, has the skills that you're looking for.
Yeah.
Because people lie on their CVs and blah, 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 blah. But I think it's... Trying to write code and in an environment like an interview is not really super cool for anyone, really. I mean, it sucks.
It's stressful.
It really sucks.
And yeah.
Sorry. And yeah, it is really stressful. And I don't know one person who enjoys doing that stuff.
No.
So I honestly discourage it for our teams, because you can ask like very technical questions or ask someone to walk you through a solution that they've built. And just by hearing a person talk, you can understand whether or not they are capable, if they actually understand what it is that they're talking about.
Yeah.
There's a very big difference, for me at least, between someone who has really internalized the concept versus someone who has maybe read about it a few times and has some insight. So that I think is one key point that people don't think about too often.
Yeah.
You know, so in my opinion, do away with the live coding, because it really sucks. It's horrible. Nobody likes it.
Is that your process then as well, that there's no kind of live coding component?
Well, since I'm not really involved in the technical interviews anymore, I don't always know whether or not they are doing live coding, but I discourage it, like I say. If a person who is doing the interview feels like they need to do it, then they can do it. But it's not sort of mandatory, let's say.
Mm-hmm. I get that. For me, I always enjoy, from both ends, more so the conversational aspect. But it is... Like I get what you say, that you can pick up if someone has internalized those concepts, but I feel like it's still kind of difficult because if their way of working is, let's say, lacking, I mean, they can fix that, but sometimes it's also hard to fix.
Yeah. Yeah, true. I mean, one thing I tell people quite often as well is, even if a person, if we're hiring, for example, for a senior role, and we can see that a person is not necessarily on a senior level technically, but they have great soft skills.
Yeah.
They are great communicators. You know, they talk easily. Then we would still hire them at that senior level, because it's easy to teach technical skills, in my opinion. It's not so easy to teach soft skills.
Yeah.
Like, you can't necessarily change a person's culture in a short period of time. And that's not maybe something you want to do. But also, like, you will never get it 100% correct, because nobody is their true self during an interview.
Yeah.
You know, they are selling themselves to some extent. So they are bullshitting a little bit here and there, of course.
That's a great point.
Everyone does it.
Yeah.
So, you have to sort of, to some extent, trust your instinct as well. And that's why we have things like probation periods, where if someone is not sort of what you expected or how they presented themselves during an interview, then you have the opportunity to let them improve or to let them go, basically. Yeah. So,
without naming any names, like, has that happened where you hired someone, you trusted your instinct, but at the end, like, it wasn't as good of a match as you thought it would be?
Well, yeah. I mean, that has happened. But it's never happened where we've let someone go during the probation period, because they've always sort of... I mean, if you sit down and have a serious discussion with someone and tell them, like, look, this is the expectation, this is what we expect of you, you're not sort of reaching it yet, but you have some time to still get there.
Yeah.
And if that person then sort of sees that and you can see them trying, then it's more or less okay.
That's good.
And I think that's mostly the situations that I find myself in.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, like I say, you'll never get 100% right, and your gut is always not right. Maybe you have a hangover and your gut is just hungry.
Yeah,
you know, like, yeah, it's not going to always be perfect, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, how have you gotten better at having those conversations? Because it's, for me, to have that conversation, I think I can do it, but it can be a difficult conversation. Like, setting the expectation, being like, especially with a person that just got on, like, you might just crush their motivation if you do it the wrong way.
Yeah, yeah.
How have you gotten better at that?
Well, we have done a lot of training, obviously. We have... a lot of ongoing, like, sort of management training and that type of stuff. And difficult conversations is one of the topics that is always there.
Yeah.
But honestly, the more you do it, the easier it becomes, you know, and you can sort of, there's like a, I don't know really how to put this. It's like a red thread that runs through any sort of dialogue where you sort of know what points to touch on and what points not to touch on, regardless of a person's culture or anything like that. And again, like, if you are authentic and transparent, then people will sort of listen, you know, and have like empathy with people. You know, try to put yourself in their shoes and understand how they would be feeling if they were the ones receiving, if you were the one receiving the feedback from them, from yourself. It's never easy, but the more you do it, the easier it does become.
Yeah. So, I really like that.
You have to just keep doing it. It's like that scene from BoJack Horseman. I think it's a popular meme all the time. Like, it's really difficult, but you have to, it gets easier. You just have to do it. You have to keep doing it every day. Mm. Something along those lines. Yeah. And that's basically how it is. The more you do it, the easier it becomes.
Yeah. Has there any kind of moving from IC to engineering manager and even director, has there been any like specific components that you don't really enjoy compared to the other ones, or ones that you even surprisingly do enjoy?
Well, I think the ones that I don't enjoy, of course, like, I think any reasonable human, are the difficult conversations. Because, you know, sometimes you have to sort of not necessarily reprimand someone, but you have to remind them of where they are and that they can't necessarily, you know, because people will always take advantage. Well, some people will take advantage where they see the opportunity to do so. Mm-hmm. So having conversations where you have to sort of remind someone that they can't do a certain thing or that they have stepped out of line.
Like address their behavior?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Those conversations are even still like always a little bit difficult to have, because to some extent you're sort of like not hurting that person, but you're saying, you know, you're like, I don't know, you're sort of rubbing them the wrong way to some extent, because... I know from my own personal experience, if my manager tells me, you know, you were out of line doing this, then it doesn't feel great, right? No. It's like a little bit a little bit disappointing when you sort of have to deal with situations like that. But difficult conversations, I think, are the part that I don't enjoy.
Mm.
And the rest, I think, I would say I enjoy the rest like equally.
Mm.
There's nothing can think of that sort of sticks out as something that I enjoy more than something else.
Yeah. Do you think you'll ever grow to a point where you're gonna let go of the hands-on part, even though it's like 20% now? Will it ever be 5 or 0 even?
Maybe not. I mean, you know, I still really enjoy coding.
Yeah.
So I will still always want to have some part in it. But it's funny because we started this sort of internal project recently at work, and one of the people who's working on it was like breaking down what technology they were going to use for this particular project.
Yeah.
And it was a front-end project, and honestly, I didn't recognize half of the shit that she like had put in the message.
Yeah.
It's like, what is this?
It goes quick.
I've never even heard of this.
Yeah.
And it hasn't even been that long since I was like out of it.
So how many years?
Oh, 2021, like two and a bit, I think. Maybe two and a half or so.
Yeah, things go fast.
So yeah, and it's amazing how quickly it does actually move.
Yeah.
Like the only two things I recognized out of all that whole stack was React and TypeScript. I mean,
yeah, I was like,
how does the rest of this stuff? But yeah, I mean, the thing is also you have to have some level of trust in the people that you manage as well to make sure or to be confident that they are capable enough to make decisions for themselves. So
it's hard to then go back as well. Like if you're on this, let's say, engineering manager track and you're 2 years down the line and you might at some point want to go back, then especially when it comes to front-end technologies, like certain fundamental knowledge will always be there.
Yeah.
But when it comes to kind of the latest tech that everyone's using, you might have to kind of catch up again.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is quite definitely hard.
Although I don't really think it'll be that hard, to be honest. Mm. I think if you, like you say, those fundamental concepts don't necessarily leave you that quickly. So if you were to pick it up again after a few years, I think you would probably pick it up relatively quickly, I would say, in my opinion. But I don't know. I mean,
no, right?
One way to find out, I can go, I don't know, rebuild some website I built 10 years ago and see how that goes.
Yeah.
But yeah.
One of my like biggest concerns going on this track, and especially doing it in the same company, mm-hmm. like I like being friends with my colleagues, not mm-hmm. just be colleagues, but also know about their personal life. And when shit is like hitting the fan, we talk about it. Like there's no filter.
Yeah.
I feel like if I get to a point where I have more of the business responsibilities as well as the people responsibilities, those conversations are not going to be as authentic. There's going to be this hierarchy in place that I might be their team leader, manager, or what have you. And I feel like I'll lose that, which is like scary to me because I don't want to lose that, but I feel like it might be inevitable.
Yeah, it's actually, this is something I've thought about quite a bit because I've been in the situation a lot. I have worked with like some of my best friends as their managers. And the way I have this comparison. So you know how in software, we always sort of have this separation of concerns. Like you always maintain a separation of concerns when you're creating an application or something.
Yeah.
You have to sort of keep that same mindset when you are working or managing your friends as well. And that's the same thing that I tell them. Compartmentalization. So if we are talking in a work context, then forget about everything else, you know, and just that's basically it. Like when I'm at work, I'm your boss and that's it. We can still talk shit and blah, 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 blah and have fun. But there are certain situations, like I know this one friend of mine, who he recently left the company actually, but you know, I told him at one point, just tell me when you need to have a serious conversation. And then that's it. Like the friendship goes out the window for 5 minutes while we talk about it. And that's it. And it actually makes those work conversations a little bit easier because you are also sort of very comfortable with that person. And they might not necessarily be too easily offended at something you say that they don't agree with.
Yeah.
So yeah, just that sense of separation of concerns, compartmentalization becomes really important when you do work with or manage your friends on that level.
Did that like come easy to you, flipping that switch and being because it sounds like it.
Yeah, I don't know why, but work for me is like a box. It's it's completely different to, you know, like work relationships are of course different to relationships outside of work.
Yeah.
But things like that just feel very natural for me.
It might be the only way for me to handle that, but I have really good memory, especially when we have a conversation. What someone said, like it sticks with me, mm-hmm. helps with this podcast.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But in having those conversations in and out of work, then for me, I think it would be hard to, I don't know, maybe even let go of some things. Like, I don't know how I would handle that. Like that to me is kind of the scary part.
Yeah, but again, that's something that sort of comes with practice. Mm. You know, when you do it enough, you sort of get used to it.
Yeah.
And then you find a routine that works for you. You know, it doesn't have to be what the other person is doing. It can be, like you will find your own way of dealing with it eventually.
Yeah. And you communicating that to your team or to your friends even, has that allowed them to kind of be as open with you, or do you still notice that they're not telling you everything sometimes?
Sometimes I do notice that, But for the most part, I think it's, you know, again, there's transparency is super important.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that I always do try and impress on people as well, especially if I'm working with friends. Just be transparent. I mean, we are friends, right? You can tell me whatever. It doesn't matter. I'm not going to get annoyed with you. I'm not going to fire you. I'm not going to, you know, like whatever. So, yeah. I mean, there was a situation where a friend of mine who I was working with was he didn't tell me at the time, but he had done a few interviews and was looking at accepting a final offer from a different company.
Yeah.
And he came and told me only when he had the final offer. He was like, I didn't tell you I was doing interviews and things like that, but I have this offer. You know,
I got it. Yeah.
What can you do about it? And I was like, okay, well, yeah, you should have come to me first because we can pay you more than what that company is offering you. So you should have just come to me first with whatever the issue was. And in that case, it was a salary issue.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, again, just if you can impress on them to be transparent and open with you as a friend in a work context, then it should be fine.
Yeah. Just in general, because I think what you laid out is quite interesting. I've heard that before, that people look outside, get an offer, and then try and negotiate whatever they have.
Yeah.
Why is that a thing? Why can't it just be like, oh, you get what you deserve in kind of an end of year chat? Why do people have to go outside and then kind of renegotiate their position sometimes?
I don't know. I think it's like this thing of, you know, people get super comfortable where they are, especially if you're there for a long period of time. But then, you know, you see someone else who's like earning a little bit more in a different company and, you know, you start sort of daydreaming about the lifestyle you could have if you're earning that much money, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, then you sort of get to the end point where you are sort of need to make a decision whether you're actually going to leave and go work for that other company.
Yeah.
And I think human nature, people want to stay where they're comfortable, and then they start having second thoughts and like, okay, but maybe I can use this as leverage at, you know, where I am currently to get more money. And from my experience, because this has happened quite often.
And it works?
It does sometimes. Like I've had situations where someone has said, oh, I have an offer from another company. What is there anything, you know, like, can you match it or can you do better? And in some cases, like, no, we can't, but we can do this.
Okay.
You know? Or we can set out a plan for the next 3 years where we can get you to, you know, somewhere close or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And in most cases, people will accept that rather than jumping ship and going and working for another company, because that whole thing is really stressful, right?
Like
starting
again.
Yeah, exactly. It's like no one really wants to do that.
No.
But at the same time, it's sort of like a double-edged sword, because life begins at the edge of your comfort zone, right? Like you have to become uncomfortable to grow. Mm-hmm. You sort of risk becoming too content if you stay somewhere for too long.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the important things about being a leader as well, is trying to get people out of their comfort zones to make sure that they are still feeling engaged as often as possible. And it's also like it comes down a lot to the individual themselves. Like some people just are not super interested in career growth and they are happy where they are and they just like coast, you know. But there are the people who are super ambitious and want to grow fast and they want to grow far. So as a manager, you have to identify those like two different types and react accordingly.
Yeah. Do you also like put more energy into the one that wants to grow kind of faster and has more career ambitions compared to the people that coast?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Because, you know, to some extent, the people that coast, you can always, like, the thing is, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink, right?
Yeah.
So you can sort of encourage a person who is not super interested in career growth to, you know, pursue a particular thing. And whether they do or not is ultimately up to them. It's a choice that they have to make.
Yeah.
But typically, from my experience, at least, from the people who are really ambitious and who do want to grow, they don't necessarily know where and how. So those are the people who do need a little bit more guidance and mentorship. And honestly, like as a manager, you have to have time to invest into people.
Yeah.
Because that's how people grow. Like for me, mentorship was one of the most important things for me. You know, I had great mentors throughout my career. And that's one of the reasons why I was able to sort of reach where I am, was because I had a lot of great people to look up to and to learn from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think without that, people who are sort of not necessarily in the early stages of the career, but are maybe looking for a career change or looking for something new, it's important to be able to offer them that path.
Yeah.
You know, within like the parameters of where you work, you might not be able to give them everything they want, but you can try, you know, and come to some sort of reasonable middle ground.
Yeah. So I really align with that. Like I was always, when I joined, like especially in my first company, I joined in operations. I wanted to grow as fast as possible because I had no clue where I wanted to end up, like where I would end up.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get there faster because I knew it would be maybe more relaxed, maybe more comforting in knowing that I really like what I'm doing and this is going to be there for the long haul. Now, I still don't know if I found it, and I'm still kind of on this track of trying to grow, trying to develop on a personal level, mm-hmm. and I don't think it ever goes away. So then to offer that, to now be able to offer that to other people is for me like the bare minimum. Like, that's what I'm here for. I want to offer you those options that I had also in growing yeah. in my career myself. And I do recognize that some people have kind of different ambitions in that aspect and will pull on you harder than others. And in the beginning, I thought it was very difficult because I wanted to be equal to everyone, right? Equal distribution of my time.
Yeah.
But if not everyone requires equal distribution of my time, yeah. then I shouldn't do that, exactly. basically.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I do. I mean, there are some people on my team who I have monthly calls with.
Yeah.
And there are other people who I have bi-weekly calls with. And others, you know, want to talk to me every single week. So it all depends sort of what the situation is, what they want, and yeah, how you exactly can help them.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. You touched on transparency as well when it kind of came to that conversation with your colleague, with your friend, mm-hmm. when it came to them kind of looking outside of the company. Transparency has always been an interesting topic for me because especially from an IC role, like I'm like, give us more information because I think everyone I work with is a reasonable human being. The more problems we know, the more like we know about what's going on, yeah. we can also offer help in that way.
Exactly.
So now, especially in the position I am, sometimes they're like, or there's conversations where they're like, okay, this might not be the best time to kind of talk about this thing. And I'm like, why not? Like, I try and challenge everything because I also don't like holding my cards close to me, I guess. Maybe it's the wrong analogy. I just don't like talking about things that are kind of in the middle, or when someone brings up something, I'm like, well, something's coming, but I can't really talk about it.
Yeah.
I have a real hard time doing that. Sometimes I don't do that because I don't really see sometimes why we can't communicate and be more transparent mm-hmm. as an organization. Like, it can be a general thing, but have you ever found yourself in positions where you couldn't be as transparent, or where even your transparency hurt rather than it did good?
Yeah.
Because I'm curious about that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it happens all the time, especially in more senior management roles, because again, you have a part of it is business focused, right? Mm-hmm. So, but my approach is normally to say, like, if someone asks a particular question or is looking for a specific piece of information, if I know that information, but I know that I also can't tell them, then I will tell them, like, hey, I know this, but I can't tell you about it.
Okay.
I'm sorry. It's because of these reasons.
Yeah.
And oftentimes that's sort of enough. I think what is helpful for a lot of people, often if they have grievances, is literally just to talk about them, you know, because that helps to just sort of clear the air a little bit. But yeah, there have definitely been instances where, you know, I haven't been able to be as transparent as I would like to be
yeah.
because of the business side of things, or for fear of, you know, sort of maybe hurting their feelings or, like setting them off setting them onto the wrong path,
mm-hmm.
this type of stuff.
When it comes to the information that is kind of, let's say, withheld sometimes, where does that lie in? Like, when information is shared and when information usually is like, okay, we can't share this yet, but we're working on this. Is it like, because it obviously affects the people within your team, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure where the line is then.
Well, it depends. I mean, a lot of it, I would say, is around policies, new policies that are upcoming, things that change, salary brackets that change, this type of stuff. Because I always feel, especially from, like, I always try to lean back on my experience as a software engineer because there's, I mean, it's 90% of it is problem solving, right? Like, you're basically solving problems. If there's a particular piece of information that I know that I can't necessarily share with someone, then, again, just like, be honest with them and tell them, like, hey, I know this, but I can't tell you because it's gonna, like, you, like, it will come out eventually.
Yeah.
Like, there will be an announcement or there will be an email or something to let people know.
But then, when it comes to the information, do you see like a line between what can be shared and what cannot be shared? It's more so policy-based, you mentioned?
Yeah, policy-based, pretty much. But there is, I mean, it also depends on the relationship that you have with the person, right?
Yeah.
Like, sometimes, even if you are not necessarily supposed to share something, and you can because you trust that person,
yeah.
then that's also okay. That also, like, helps to build a relationship with that person as well because they feel a little bit more like you are being more transparent with them.
Mm-hmm.
So it has happened to me on a few occasions where I'll be like, I can't actually tell her this, so don't tell anyone, but this is the story.
I love that you're honest about that, because I hadn't thought about that. Like, sometimes I feel stupid for playing dumb. Like, yeah, I don't know anything about that. Like, I'm really bad at that.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. But just explaining to them, like, something is coming and I can't talk about it. I think I'm going to adopt that for sure, because I don't like playing dumb.
Yeah, the thing is, I mean, then people will sometimes go and look around for information in other places.
Yeah. But,
yeah. Again, I think transparency is really important, especially in leadership roles.
Yeah.
As often as possible.
Yeah, I agree
within reason,
with that,
of course.
For sure. Yeah. In kind of laying out your track from IC to engineering manager, engineering director, is there anything that's still missing that you want to add to the conversation we had?
I'm not sure. I think I would say for anyone who is sort of transitioning through that period, don't be too worried, you know. And if you feel like you're not sort of able to find your feet in leadership, everyone feels like that. You know, it will take a little bit of time, and if it doesn't, then damn, please come and work for me, because we need people like you.
We need people.
But yeah, like it'll take time to find your leadership style, and you don't have to necessarily adopt one particular style, right? It's also a lot about flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
Different people require different styles of management as well. Like, so you have to be adaptable and you have to be flexible in that sense. So yeah, just there was this guy who worked at our company on the design team like years ago, and he said one thing. It was, in context, it sounded really silly, but it stuck with me. And he said, just be like water, just go with the flow.
Mm-hmm.
And that just be like water thing is something that I think is actually really valuable advice, to be honest. So, and not always, you can't always just go with the flow. Like, sometimes you have to fight back and swim upstream. But yeah, for the most part, it's okay to just go with the flow and don't feel bad. Imposter syndrome affects everyone.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And you're flexible like water as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, good stuff. I love that. Uh-huh. Cool, man. Thanks, Michael. This was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for coming on.
Are we done already?
Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna round it off here. How did things go?
Yeah, good.
We're still recording.
Yeah. No, I would imagine so. Hell, but it was good. It was went a lot faster than I thought, actually.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Those are good conversations. Yeah, I've noticed.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Great
as well.
Interviewer.
Thank you. I try. Cool. I'm going to round it off here, everyone. I'm going to put all Michael's socials in the description below. Check him out. Let him know you came from our episode. And with that being said, thank you for listening. We'll see you on the next one.